Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Geomologist Presents. Today's show is mostly going to be a call-in show. I guess I was surprised at the number of call-ins that I received, but it was great. So it's going to be mostly call-ins. And I do talk about, Amy and I talk about, full disclosure, it is an unboxing of sorts, but we talk about a new game that we want to start a campaign on. That game, well, it's in the show notes, Blessed and the Blasphemous by Sons of Singularity. It looks really good, and Amy's excited about it. I'm excited about it. Not that I need another game, but, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. In any case, well, basically what it is a Call of Cthulhu game set on the eve of World War II in Morocco. So you got Casablanca going on, right? So of course, Amy likes it. Anyway, I got the calls from Joe Richter, Jason Connerly. Riley is a first-time caller. He does the Diegetic Advancement podcast, which is a really cool new podcast, and Colin Green. So it's great to hear from old Spike Pitt again. And, of course, always great to hear from Joe Richter, Hindsightless, and Jason Connerly, the incomparable host of Nerds RPG Variety Cast. You know, it's really funny. I typed in Nerds RPG Variety Cat, and his podcast still came up. So he is cornering the cat lover market as well. All right. So I talked about a lot of sustainable games, but I didn't give you like a state of the games, and they're going pretty well. So I, with the new job, it's the first time I worked like a full day in a long time. And then over the weekend, I volunteered for the 9th annual crawfish boil at our local watering hole, Flying Saucer. And I was exhausted. Who knew that scooping about 700 pounds of crawfish would do you in with a sore back and sore hamstrings? My forearms, surprisingly, were not sore, though, of course, my wrist really hurt. But if you recall, I broke my wrist December of 2022. November of 2022, had surgery in December. So it's been about a year and 3 months, and it still hurts. It's going to permanently hurt. It's definitely got the beginnings of that wonderful thing called arthritis, but it is what it is. And it didn't give, and I was able to use it, so it's still got some strength in it. So that's good, you know. That reminds me of the Conan quote that what is steel compared to the hand that wields it? And when Conan, you know, after he recovers, wraps his wrist around and he's looking at his fist, hey man, my wrist's still strong. That's good. It's good for things, right? Joe might know. Anyway, so yeah, let's talk about these games. Mainly, I guess I haven't talked about them, especially, say, for example, Twilight 2000, because we're recording it on YouTube. But right now, they're at the tail end of the ruins of Warsaw. They've assaulted the Baron. We're supposed to play tonight, but it might be postponed due to illness and travel for some people. And I still got to figure out what that damn chemical round that Amy's ruthless character shot at the poor big bad guy. Well, his castle, at least. So that's going on. It's going really well, I think. I don't know if I've still decided what I'm going to do, if there's going to be a Cilicia, Krakow, Winter War, or if I'll just advance 6 months to the spring and, you know, nothing happened, or maybe that things will happen then. Or maybe Kasha and her sidekick Ren will defuse the situation, but we'll see. And what else is going on? Yes, I didn't get to, because of working all day, I was exhausted and I didn't get home till late, and we didn't get to play Travelers. That's a bummer, because I really am enjoying the murder mystery going on in Traveler. I hope the players aren't too disappointed and will continue to play. So that's in the middle of a murder mystery, and they've started, they've gone through all the evidence, I guess the physical evidence, and now they're interrogating, questioning the suspects. So that's kind of cool. We actually got some, and Pathfinder is our Pathfinder Wednesdays. We actually haven't played Kingmaker for a little bit, but the last time was a nice exploration, getting away from the what seems a little arduous kingdom turn, but we're going to try to alleviate that. And then we did get a session of Abomination Vaults in, and they've gotten to the first or the next level. They entered and had a couple of fights, a couple of rooms were cleared, but there's a lot of changes in the latest update to Fantasy Grounds, and it took us a little bit of time to find everything. So apologies there for my lack of technical savvy, but everyone had issues. So it is what it is, but it was pretty fun to get some fights in. The characters are pretty good, and I was rolling awful, really, really bad. And there were some cool, and the characters are really rolling really well. There's a couple times when even at the worst save that the Dwarf Paladin had, the reflex save, I believe, he totally blew it out of the park. So hit it out of the park. But I guess blowing it out of the park, I guess if you were a dragon or a windstorm, you could blow it out of the park. In any case, he hit it out of the park with his saving throws, and this gibbering mouther couldn't engulf him, which would have been a lot of damage. Kind of cool, but, and I'm sure he would have smacked his way out, but alas, it was not to be. They smashed that mouther into ooze, I guess, little oozes, oozelets, and then they fought a devil, like a chained devil, and took care of that creature pretty well, too. So I thought it was a couple good to get rolling again in Abomination Vaults. Warhammer Fantasy always goes well. The player characters are now in sort of second phase of the Horned Rat book, and they have proven to the powers in Middenheim that there are Skaven in the walls, and they actually took care of a bunch of Skaven who had been, oddly, they've now learned that the Skaven having their own little squabbles in war, and they encountered some Skaven that had been trapped and trapped in a room, locked up, and then were succumbing to the Black Hunger. They destroyed them. They didn't get the information that they could have gotten, but it was a decision. We're just going to destroy them. I don't want to talk to these Skaven. And then they went out into the country, and that was pretty cool. They went out to the country they heard some rumors of other shenanigans going on, and before the graph was to give them some sort of charter to go explore another area that was, they were having some trouble with one of the earls or the barons, and the graph was going to give them like an official charter so they wouldn't get, you know, messed up or immediately attacked. But in the meantime, go explore these other weird things that are going on, one of which is a miner getting killed by some warpstone, and in the investigation, a miner getting really mutilated, and they learned that he'd been killed by some sort of warpstone weapon, maybe a warp flamethrower and or a warp grinder, so with a warp flamethrower attachment, which would be scary. And then they heard of this sort of beast that was plaguing another town, so they went to go investigate. They got to where the beast was, the town where the beast was, and they tracked down the beast with the help of a local guide, and this beast turned out to be a mutated griffin, or a griffin that had been hit by some sort of weapon, it turned out, but it was still a griffin, and the characters had to put it down. However, the griffin got a good shot in and tore through the chest of one of the player characters, Ulrich, the blasphemer, we're calling him, or Ulrich, one arm. It happened again. So he went down, and when you go to zero, you have to, so he had gotten hit pretty hard and he was bleeding, got hit with a critical, and then he went down because of the bleeding. When you go to zero in Warhammer Fantasy, you have to roll in the critical table again. And I rolled in the critical table, and it was like another, not instant death, but a death, right? So it was like, effectively, the wound was, was infected, a lot of internal organ damage, and he contracted the blood rot. So he has 4 days before he dies. There are things that the players are trying to do to, and we have I have a process that I've given them on what we're going to do to see if he can survive. And they did run into a priest of Shalia on the road as they dealt with refugees. So they can maybe fly or ride hard back to Middenheim to catch up with this priest of Shalia. And maybe the priest of Shalia can cure the disease that's going to kill him. I mean, obviously, with a fate point meta currency, the player could just say, well, with a fate point, I run into them, or it gets treated somehow, or there's a priest who can treat it. But he wants to go through the process and see if he needs to burn that fate point or not, which I guess is his prerogative. And he might decide, well, the dice were against me, so I will let that character pass. So that was pretty good fight. And fortunately, there have a couple, not aside from Ulrich, who is really a good fighter, just got, you know, sometimes luck doesn't go your way. And the player character is actually the mage in the party had to turn into like a griffin or demigriff. And although he was unable to like hit or strike at the mutated griffin, the injured griffin, at least he was able to add another body into the fight and then help the players to gain some bonuses, since you're fighting like enormous versus enormous creature, and then the gang up, they were allowed to get the gang up bonus. Because when there are two little creatures or two medium-sized creatures in the sort of D&D parlance fighting an enormous creature, well, it's not going to get a negative bonus for gang up or be affected by the negatives for being ganged up upon. And then the dwarf and the duelist were able to fell the creature, and with some fire support from the the Inquisitor of Varina in the group. So yeah, the NPC just like ran away because it's a scary monster. So, but yeah, it was a good fight. Hopefully, we do not have a casualty. I've outlined a kind of a cool procedure for it, which was pretty fun to do. So let me see if I can find it real quick. And here's how it's going to work. So I said I wanted to outline the procedure to attempt to save Ulrich. First, I would roll a d10 to see if chaos is trying to screw with you. So don't roll a 6 to a 9. If you roll a 6 to a 9, then they might have to do something else or drastic, or there's no priest around in the town of Grod Beach that they're going to. If he rolls a 10, I might give him some choices. I already rolled up the priest of Ulrich that tends the shrine in Grod Beach. And at the coaching inn called the Floodstone, there might be a priest or two. Alternatively, like I had mentioned, one of them or the companions can ride or fly, since one can potentially turn into a demigriff or a griffin, towards Middenheim and find the priest of Shalia that they rescued from the mob, which I did roll up as well. Or they could get to the city and find allied Shalians. I mean, that could take 1 to 2 days. Then we rolled to see if the miracles work. The Orkans and others, i.e. like a priest of Tal, might have tenacity as a blessing, which can help stem the disease. It won't cure the disease, but it'll mitigate the damage from the disease. But the priest of Shalia could actually save Ulrich with a couple miracles. Of course, he can burn a fate point at any time to have the appropriate person to save him available. But he also might lose permanent toughness as a consequence due to the blood rot. And those would be endurance rolls so that the character would have to make and potentially burn fate or use fortune to make those rolls. So we'll see how it goes. Finally, we have Blood Lords, and that's going to continue. The characters had a pretty... They're robbing a bank right now. And I feel like they've cleared almost the first level of the bank, and they're going to go down into the vaults, which is why they're there in the first place. They fought a demon zombie. It's called the Bodak. And they did pretty well. It was kind of cool how Joe Richter said that his characters were able to do like 300 points of damage per round, or 200 points of damage or something per round. And I was shocked that my little paltry second level crew was able to do 50 points of damage in one round. So that was pretty neat. Speaking of Joe Richter, well, let's get to those calls.
Yo, Carl, just calling in because I wanted to say, I know you talked about how you don't share a whole lot of personal stuff about yourself on your podcast, but I wanted to say that for what it's worth, I'm really proud of you and happy that you stood up for yourself when injustice happened, because one of the greatest things we can do for ourselves is to stand up for ourselves when we're getting screwed over. 'Cause the world, as sucky as it is, will try to screw you over because there are a lot of people in the world who don't give a shit about anyone else other than themselves. And so, yeah, that's awesome that you did that. Congratulations on the new job and congratulations on having so many long-running campaigns, dude. That's awesome, man. I can't imagine having multiple that many campaigns going at one time. I just don't know if I could do it, but that's pretty awesome that you can. Wrath of the Righteous, my Wrath of the Righteous game has been going on for over 2 years now. This summer, in a couple months, it'll be 2.5 years, and it's just crazy. But like you pointed out, the reason it's still ongoing is because as a group, we get along, we like each other, we're enjoying the game, and yeah, so it just keeps going, man. So congratulations on having those all those games going. And then as far as starter sets go, if they don't include character creation, that would bug me. I would be so annoyed at buying a starter set and it didn't have character creation rules, because I really think one of the best ways you can learn how to play a game is by making characters. So yeah, I don't know, man. That's my one main beef with starter sets. It just you're not buying the whole game generally, and then you buy the starter set, and then you got to buy the actual game when it comes out to get the rest of the rules. And it, I don't know. That's just it, though. Anyway, man, that's a lot of stuff in this call. So do with it what you will. Take it easy, man. Congrats again. Have a good one. Peace out.
Hey Joe, thank you for the call. I'm impressed when I hear about your Wrath of the Righteous, and I guess we agree that it is the players that make up the game that keep the game going. The players kind of drive if it's sustainable and interesting, right? For the GM, we always have stories, and I know for me, I have sometimes a game master ADD where I want to jump from one game to the next because I have so many games and I want to get them to the table. But the games that we keep going or playing that are not one shots or one adventures are the ones where the players are like, yeah, I want to keep going with this. So that's why like our Twilight 2000 turned into a campaign that's almost 3 years long, according to my wife. She told me the other day, oh yeah, it's almost 3 years. So, which is kind of cool. So speaking of Twilight 2000, so that's not really a starter set, it's a box set, but it has a complete game in a box, which is kind of nice. I guess it harkens to the original Twilight 2000 first edition box set, which was also a complete game. Now, a starter set that I recently obtained is a Dragonbane starter set. It has an initial adventure, it has like a brief synopsis on the campaign world, but it has a complete rule set in that you can create characters or you can use the pre-generated characters they have in the box. And it's a pretty hefty box set that has a complete game. And I guess they're coming out with a hardcover rule book at some point. Maybe it's already out, and a bestiary to supplement it. But you have the complete game that you can play with characters and go from there with all the adventure hooks and mini gazetteer that they have in the book after playing the initial adventure. Or you maybe don't want to play the initial adventure, just make your characters and go. Right. So yeah, Dragonbane's really cool, and it has what I like about it has anthropomorphic duck characters, which I think is a hallmark of any top-notch fantasy role-playing game. So thanks for the words of encouragement, Joe. Yeah, it's I don't know, sometimes things happen for a reason, and maybe this kind of setback and the anger that it generated kind of pushed me towards this new career, and hopefully it will be lucrative, and I will let you guys know in the future. If it is, maybe you'll see me visiting Seattle because, I got so much, I'm rolling in the dough, right? Oh, I don't know. We'll see. These things take time. It's a new career. I definitely am impressed with this company's push towards education and getting their people in the know about their stuff as much as possible and getting licensing as quickly as possible. So it's all good. And I really, my compliance office says I cannot talk about this company so much. But that is another interesting thing. I've never been in a company that has a dedicated compliance officer. So there you go. Thanks for the call. Next up, we're going to have Jason Connerly. He's got a couple calls, so I'll just let you guys listen to those calls and I'll rebuttal, although Jason always has really good arguments, which usually, I mean, it's so hard to rebuttal for his top-notch Lincoln Douglas debate style. So maybe I'll just let you listen to them. All right. Here comes Jason.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Hey Carl, Jason here. So as I said on the Discord messages, I like box sets when we talk about TSR era box sets. And you know, you're talking like Top Secret, Gamma World, Star Frontiers, Marvel Superheroes, the basic sets for D&D, because they're complete games. I think starter sets are a cash grab, and I don't like them. If you're playing at the table, sure, you can normally pass that starter set incomplete rulebook around to the players, but not always. The Cyberpunk Red rules, they use their starter set as a beta test. And so the Cyberpunk Red starter set rules are different from the final Cyberpunk Red rules. So you couldn't pass that book around the table for a rules reference. It's nice to see Chaosium's has these, solo play things in there like the games of old. I'm glad they're paying attention to what works from the old games. So that's a good thing. But yeah, for the most part, because answer me this. These starter sets you've run that you really enjoy, you're still buying the main book, right? You're still buying the core book when it comes out. So if you're playing online, it ends up just costing you more money. If you're playing in person and the starter set has all stand-ups and other things, okay, I can see that. Although I have a feeling that you, Carl, personally have enough bits and bobs from other games that you don't need the stand-ups and maps that come in the in these starter sets. I would be much more interested in a true box set that had a complete set of the rules. Maybe the box set comes with a soft cover copy of the rules, and you can buy a hard cover copy of the rules separate from the box set, right? But in the end, I think starter sets, for the most part, to me, just to Jason, are incomplete and they don't give me what I want. Because, like you say, without character creation, some of these other things, it's just not a full game. So I personally would much rather have the full rules. So a box set, I'm 100% behind. A starter set, not interested. But that comes from perspective of somebody that plays pretty much 100% online. So, your mileage may vary.
Hey Carl, congratulations on having so many long-running games. And I think you're right. The key to longevity is the group and is friendship among the group and that camaraderie among the group. Unfortunately, sometimes real life does get in the way of even that. I really enjoyed playing with you guys. I consider you a friend. My schedule just made it untenable for me to play, unfortunately. But that wasn't because I didn't enjoy playing with you guys or that I don't want to, But I think the fact that you guys get together and do things outside the game is a huge indicator of how strong that bond is and why those games work. Now, of course, a big part of that also is we don't want to neglect, and obviously you don't want to toot your own horn, but I can toot your horn. Well, if Amy doesn't mind me tooting your horn, but you're a good GM. You're a great GM. And you do a great job managing these games and weaving the tales and providing the resources and being available outside of the game when people reach out and have questions, during the week between games, whatever. You're there. You're a great GM. And so obviously that is a big deal too. Even when among friends, there can be clashes when there are play style differences and, people, well,
you know, it ends up being play style differences and dominance issues and things like that. And that's kind of ebb and flow is going to happen. But between the group being really good friends and you being a great GM really tells why these games are stuck together. So good job on keeping all those up. Very proud of you. Very happy for you and your players that you'll be able to experience those long-term games, because it's really awesome to have that kind of experience. And hopefully someday my schedule will allow me to play with you again. So take care and keep rolling better than me. Why did I say that? That's Tim Schwartz's thing. I don't know. I need more coffee.
Thank you so much, Jason, for the call and the accolades. I just do what I can. I mean, I've been doing this for a while, so I guess eventually you learn how to be a good GM. I don't know if great GM is the term. I know I screw up, and sometimes my games aren't as exciting as they could be. I know when they, like, when they switch over. So, for example, I've had in Pathfinder, since they just switched over from Pathfinder 2E to Pathfinder 2E revised or relocated, reallocated, revamped to get rid of all the OGL game. Well, I was like, well, what does this mean and what does that do? But it was still a good Kingmaker game. And I know I'd been like talking about Kingmaker, how like there were some kind of games the last couple times with the kingdom turn stuff. But actually one of the players like, hey, when are we going to do another kingdom turn? It's like, I guess you just got to let it ride and, you know, let it ride, let it be natural, a natural progression, right? So I guess the advice that they had is they're like, well, you know, have a kingdom turn or two and then go out into the wilderness to explore your kingdom. And they're like, yeah, that's a good idea. So they've done that for a couple sessions. And then now they're like, well, let's do another kingdom turn because that was kind of cool. And they've gotten some XP for the kingdom and they want to make things and build things. And it was neat. It was a good adventure. And then I also told them that there was this option because there's a lot of land that hasn't been explored in their charter from the first book in the adventure. And then they're like, and then I'm like, well, there's an option. We can hire adventurers to do that. So it's kind of neat. So it kind of gives a sort of idea of being patronage, having domain and sending out adventurers, NPC adventurers to go out and do some work for you. So I think that's a kind of a neat option that they have in the game. And as far as starter sets, well, yeah, you know, I've been, so like I mentioned the Dragonbane, and I just took a look at another starter set, and that is the Dreams and Machines starter set by Modiphius. So it's another 2D20 variant, Dreams and Machines, but it looked really interesting because like it's a sort of a sci-fi post-apocalyptic setting, and then you know how much I love post-apocalyptic settings. But so here it's a Dreams and Machines Collide in the Far Future, where its people come together to rebuild the ultimate tale of hope and heroism in the shadow of the Wakers, which are giant machines, alien machines. So you're a vast distance from Earth. There's a human colony bearing scars of self-inflicted apocalypse, survives on the distant world of Evra Prime. There's ruined megacities, giant machines everywhere, corrupt AI that you have to deal with. But I was like looking through it, I'm like, huh, I wonder if they have pre-gens or not. And you know what? They have a whole book on character creation. There's like several books in here. One is like the tutorial book, which has character creation, adventure book, rules reference, 20-sided dice, tokens, player character cards, 26 equipment cards, NPC cards, etc. So it's kind of neat. And I guess the way you make the characters though is you pick and select cards, and that kind of determines your abilities and stats and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of random. I guess like the other box set that is kind of neat that I have that I'd like to play, Magical Kitty Save the World. That is a complete game in a box, but it's not really a starter set. It's a complete game. But this is a starter set, and we're going to have like a rule book. And yes, I do buy the rule book eventually. But think about like the OSE. I got the book, and you can buy a complete rule book if you want to, but I haven't. I just like the little booklets. Same thing with Swords and Wizardry. You buy the box set, it's a complete game. You can buy the big rule book if you want to, but I kind of like, that's a kind of a cool model. I kind of enjoy that. So yeah, and that's a disappointing. What is it with Cyberpunk games, man? So that's disappointing about, I mean, I have the red Jumpstart kit, and I I think I have like a PDF of the Shadowrun 6th edition starter set. And both of those, they're like beta rules. And you can't really use the beta rules with the main game, which is really kind of annoying. So I feel like Pathfinder might have done that a couple times. And then they're like, maybe we're not going to do this anymore. I think they did that with Starfinder. And then people are like, why can't you do this? You know, why can't you do this? And they write in the real game. And then now they don't do that anymore. I think they put the starter sets after they released the rule book, right? So it's like, oh, you don't want to buy the full rule book and you want to just test out the game, get the starter set. So I think that's what is it with cyberpunk games? I could complain about Carbon 2185 too. Oh, that Kickstarter frustrated me. Anyway, that's for another podcast. But, thank you for those calls again, Jason. Thanks for always calling and being a buddy. And maybe one of these days when we retire for reals, we could just set up a gaming club across the interwebs. All right. Talk to you soon. All right, next, we have a first-time caller. It's a person who's new to the Anchorverse podcasting. And that is Riley of the Diegetic Advancement Podcast, which I do recommend. It's really cool, relatively new podcast. And thank you for calling in, Riley, ahead of time. And I don't have a song for you yet. I guess if you become a regular caller, you get a song or a song clip. We can't play full songs, so that'd be bad. Anyway, here's Riley.
Hey, Carl. Riley here. Just wanted to call in on starter sets. I really like them. The Call of Cthulhu starter set was a really great way to get in and try the game out without committing time and money to the full system, and really well made. You know, I like the solo game and then sort of the increasing complexity of adventures they give you there, and the rules being condensed was really easy to get into. I do like if they can be cheap, so it doesn't feel like it's a waste if you then go to the full game, or have some use after you get the full game. Really enjoying the episodes. Glad to hear you're doing well, and all your games sound like a blast. So thanks for sharing them. Talk to you later. Bye.
Welcome to the Geomologist Presents, Riley. Thank you for the call. Yes, the Call of Cthulhu starter set is really good. And actually, since my wife doesn't like making characters, she really bonded with Keiko Kane in that box set. And used her as a character in the first adventure that you kind of play as a duel in there. And then that sparked our sort of Arkham University, Arkham Miskatonic University campaign that we've been running for a little bit, and which is kind of neat. So it's on hiatus right now, but originally she took Keiko, and then Keiko became, I think she was a biology pre-med student, and now she's a psychiatrist, MD, associated with Miskatonic, but working at Arkham Asylum. Not the DC Arkham Asylum with the Joker and Scarecrow and stuff, but, you know, the Arkham Asylum, the original Arkham Asylum from Call of Cthulhu. So it's a really good box set. I'm really happy with the offerings, the box sets that Chaosium puts out. And this brings to mind something also that Jason mentioned or brought up, that he only plays, that starter sets are lost on him, like all the bits and bobs. Because he only plays online. But I guess if you go, I feel like their starter sets are on the marketplace, like at Roll 20 especially, and probably Fantasy Grounds too. Let me check. Well, yes, there are a number of starter sets. The Call of Cthulhu one is there. The Blade Runner. Black Void, which, interesting, I might have to pick that up. It's not too expensive either. I played the Tales of the Loop starter set. That was a fun adventure. And then they have the Alien starter bundle, which is the Story of Worlds and I think it's the other adventure, Chariot of the Gods. So there's quite a few starter sets. Pendragon starter set is on there too. And they are actually cheaper. I mean, it's only electronic form, and of course it's subscription-based, so you don't get the PDF or anything. Which could be a deal breaker for some people. The new D&D starter set, Dragons of Stormwreck Isle, is on there as well by Wizards of the Coast. But there could be a deal breaker because you don't get the actual product, right? Oh, there's like 5 pages worth City of Mist starter set, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay starter set, the Stranger Things starter set, which is D&D. So that's quite a few that you could jump to if you just use gaming online and then you don't put a big investment in. It looks like the most expensive one is about 15, the starter bundle with the Destroyer of Worlds, which is a full-on mini campaign there. And I feel like Destroyer of Worlds might have character creation in it. I'll have to check. I have to look it up. I think I have a, but it's kind of more of like a box set in and of itself, right? So they have the starter set with has Chariot of the Gods with no character creation and pre-gens, but Destroyer of Worlds, I believe, has the option, and it came up out after the rule book, so you could probably make your own characters and then play Destroyer of Worlds, which is not really a starter set, but more of its own box set campaign. So yeah. But I guess again, the deal breaker, Call of Cthulhu is like $25, Blade Runner is $30. The core rules, but is it the core? It's a whole thing though. I think it has. Let me check it out. It looks like it has, and I don't know why I'm advertising for World 20, apologies, but it is the core rules and the starter set. So that's, is that right? Starter and game starter set module. No, I think it's just the starter set. So that's a little more. Anyway, thank you for the call, Riley. Yeah, I do. I do recommend the Chaosium starter sets, really. They're really good in, and they can spark a campaign, like I described. And now we have a call in from someone we haven't heard from for a while. It is Colin Green, Old Spike Pit. So let's hear what he has to say. Out here in the fields, I fight for my meals. I get my back into my living.
Right, Carl, how you doing, mate? I just wanted to call in defense or in support, perhaps, of starter sets. I picked up the 5e starter set, and without that, I don't think I'd have got back into the game. The expense of picking up the hardbacks, or the perceived expense of picking up the hardbacks, would have put me off a little bit, but dipping a toe in, £15, or maybe £20 at the time, didn't seem excessive. And as it goes, it was bought for me as a present. Probably I would have not pulled the trigger myself, even on that small amount. I was well into my board games, and whilst I sought the RPG experience, I just recall thinking, it's just a bit too much work, and I couldn't see it fitting into a fairly busy life. But turns out I was hooked again. You know, I ended up doing podcasting and playing RPGs, and you know, the rest is history, shall we say. And the same starter set lives on. I've passed it on to the new generation of gamers in school club. I also picked up the D&D Essentials box set, and I don't know. I mean, I still use the dice. I love the dice that came with that. It was a really good set. I've still got the dice that came with the D&D, the first D&D box set. So I've got no complaints. And as for your point about the rule books, it is super handy having those kind of, they're almost like players' books that you can share at the table. You summed it up really well in your episode. But for me, the D&D Essentials rulebook that came in the box set was so useful at the table. It was really my go-to rulebook. And over time, we'd picked up player handbooks, and we had a few kicking around on the table. But when you get in another game, you know, perhaps you're dipping your toe into something else, you might have the one rule book, you want something for the players at the table, you're the DM, you're constantly referring to the rule book, and it can be a bit of a hassle. And that is where a starter set can really help you out for cheap. you get a big map in there as well, and the dice and the pre-gens, and graphically they're normally quite beguiling as well. So I'm a bit of a fan, I've got to say, and I do understand people that say, yeah, they'd rather have the full rule set, but at times perhaps that can be a little bit intimidating as well. I mean, especially seeing the kids in action, they're almost intimidated enough with a starter set, let alone dumping down three big volumes on the table in front of them. I think they'd run a mile. Anyway, as always, I mean, enjoying the show, keep up the good work, and take care, mate. I'll catch you later.
Thank you so much, Spike Pitt, for that testimonial and the call-in. Yeah, that is something I did not really talk about as the D&D starter sets. I'm glad you were able to explain and talk about it. Not a big buy-in, but a complete rule set in there. I guess, yeah, you have to make characters for that one, too. I have the Essentials kit. I don't know if that's the same thing. I feel like there was a starter set and then an Essentials kit. Yeah, so I do have the starter set, the Lost Mine of Phandelver. I also bought the Mine of Phandelver expansion that recently came out, but I do have it on the Roll20. I don't have a physical copy, but I did get the Essentials kit, the one with the dragon and stuff. So yeah, that one I know you have to make your own characters. And I do not know, I can't remember if they have the rules in there for that or not. But in any case, I think it's cool that it is a complete game, or at least it doesn't just have pre-gens. Maybe you can clarify that if not for me or not. Colin. So that's a great explanation of the product, and that's cool that you got it back into the hobby because of it. And again, you talked about the price point not being, well, for you being kind of free since it was a gift, but being a low price point. And I think that's part of it too, is like, why invest in the big games if you don't like it? But then, you know, you just one and done the starter set. I guess that's the question. Does it have reuse, or is it reusable? I can see myself for another group, and I've done it already, run The Walking Dead, for example, stuff multiple times, seen it run multiple times. And then, so that one seems to have reuse value just to get you into The Walking Dead, at least the starter set. And then the other one is Chariot of the Gods from Alien, the Alien RPG. I think that has good reuse value. So depending on how that adventure ends. It could become, you know, that could be your ship or something like that. In any case, thank you so much again, Colin, for that call. Okay, I think I'm going to do the outro here for the next. Well, if you like to hear Amy's voice, she'll be in the next segment. But we talk about and open the Blessed and the Blasphemous package that I received recently, and talk a little bit about Blessed and the Blasphemous. You'll hear my excitement and Amy's excitement about it. If you want to, well, there's no, then that's it for this episode. So it'd be great to get your feedback, like you got all these people's feedback, or you heard it. And you can contact me at geomologist@gmail.com. Send me a voice message there. Drop me a line on the Discord. Or I do have a SpeakPipe account set up. That information will be in the show notes. So I put all the information and links to these dudes' podcasts in the show notes, so you can check them out. Thank you so much, Amy, for doing the cover clip art. Thank you so much, TJ Drennan, for doing the intro and outro music. And I do have the North Texas RPG Con jingle there after the Blessed and Blasphemous reading, because that's coming up. And then the next couple podcasts, I probably will talk about the games I'm going to run there and at ChupacabraCon in more detail. So my ChupacabraCon have been approved, and I'm waiting for the ones for North Texas. So I think at North Texas, I'm just going to focus on Fellowship and running my games. I'm going to not try to, like in the past, I'm like, oh, I got to get into the author's game. Yeah, I mean, there's pickup games. There's fun hanging out with the guys and going to the various rooms. And I don't even know if I'm going to buy stuff. I think I was like talking last night to some of my friends, and I might just buy art this time. We lost Janelle Jacques this year, and these guys are not spring chickens who are there doing their cool fantasy art. So I might buy some art pieces from Jeff Easley and people like that, just to get some some art from these famous artists. Okay, well, that'll be it. Again, up next is the unboxing of The Blessed and the Blasphemous, but Amy's a guest. She has a great voice. I know you guys like to hear her. I do. And we'll talk to you guys later. Thank you so much. Good night and good rolling.
I got a package and I'm going to blame a weekend with good friends for sending me on this torturous path. I don't know if it's torturous, maddening path. But I played this really cool adventure at a weekend with good friends. And it was called, what was it called? I can't remember what it was called. It was called Adventus Regis. And it is part of this book, Adventure Compilation by Oscar Rios with Caleb Cleveland, Lee Simpson, and friends, called Ripples from Carcosa. It's actually, I can get it as a PDF, but it's also print on demand on the Chaosium site. And it's three scenarios exploring Haster, Carcosa, and the King in Yellow. So then I was looking, and Amy can attest. Amy's here with me to help me unbox.
Hello.
Amy can attest that we were looking for this, right?
Tatters of the King.
I've been looking for it up and down the house. Tatters of the King is by Tim Weissman. He's the main author. There's other people as well. But it is basically Haster's gaze gains focus on the earth. It's a 1920 scenario done in Call of Cthulhu 6th edition that explores, Haster's return to earth, maybe. Hopefully not. But anyway, so I wanted to run like a long-term campaign. I don't know if it was focused on Haster or not. Who knows? But that has been interrupted because I got a package, and I've been waiting for this package, and I didn't know it was coming. Well, I knew it was coming, but I didn't know exactly when it was coming. And this package is from Sons of Singularity out of Cicero, Illinois. It's a big box.
But I used to live in Illinois.
Yes. So it's a big box. I'll do the measurements. I'm going to open it and then hand things to Amy to get her impressions. But this box is 11 inches, so 28 centimeters approximate by,
hold on, and my
cat wants to help me, 15 inches or whatever, that 38 and a half centimeters. And it is, like I said, it's a large box. Does it give me the weight? I don't see the weight. It's a pretty heavy box, but it is almost 4 inches thick, 3 3/4, or whatever that is, 9.5 centimeters thick. So that's, I did the measurements with my tool bench hardware tape measure. So I guess generic. It looks like one of those like Stanley Craftsman, black and yellow, but I guess it's generic. Anyway, now I'm opening it with my trusty box cutter. Yeah, I always forget. All right. So open it. Just one slice, and the rest follows. And inside is
pretty black box.
Yeah, it's like a box and a book. And of course, I put the box aside so the cats will fall into it.
And already in it.
Already one of our cats, Jewel, is crawling into it. Anyway, what I've received is The Blessed and the Blasphemous. It is in shrink wrap. And The Blessed and the Blasphemous is a Call of Cthulhu 7th edition adventure. And I'll have Amy, after I open it, I'll have Amy read the back. She is a better reader than me.
Not a better reader.
Hold on. Let me get this thing up to you. All right, go ahead.
It says, cosmic horror and intrigue set in North Africa at the onset of World War II.
And what does that remind you of?
How about all the movies we've been watching lately?
Sure. It
says, The Blessed and the Blasphemous offers a gripping tale set in the tumultuous backdrop of North Africa at the onset of World War II. Hint, hint, Casablanca.
Well, like, yeah, I mean,
this seven-scenario Call of Cthulhu campaign immerses players in a harrowing journey across diverse locations, from the bustling Casablanca seaport to the majestic peaks of the Atlas Mountains. Delve into the depths of human depravity and ancient Eldritch lore as you unravel the clues pointing to the peril that threatens the very fabric of our world.
Yeah, so that's really cool. I've been, like I said, waiting for this. It was a Kickstarter or backer kit thingy. It clocks in at about 338 pages or so. It is black and white with some color art.
Pretty thick pages.
Yeah, thick pages, not glossy. So standard printing, I guess. And it has, like they said on the back, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 scenarios, an introduction, and an appendix. And good map.
Very nice.
Yep. So and actually it's pretty well spaced and laid out, I would say. There's 2-column text. It's not as big as a 5th edition text, but it's in between like 5th edition and older, say 80s and 90s type books text. So it's pretty nice, 2-column. Lots of art that's inset in and around the text. Good maps, I'm seeing already, and the maps are kind of, three or four tone maps.
Is Rick's Americano on there?
Is Rick's Americano on this map? No, I do not. There's a Hawker's Market, which was in there. There's Old Medina. There's a Siret National Headquarters. Restaurant La Mansion Bleu. So no, I do not see Rick's, but we could throw Rick's in there, obviously. Right, so pretty cool. I'm pretty excited about it, but that's not just all that came in the box. That's the book itself.
And there's also a QR reader on the back of the
book. Yeah, the QR reader. I guess I already have the PDF, but I guess I can visit their website, and I can get the digital version if I did not do the... If one bought this in their gaming store, you could get the digital version on the PDF. Okay. Anyway.
Now
the other box. So there's a box with it. And this is the Blessed and Blasphemous Campaign Dossier.
Ooh, make there's a plane and a gun.
I don't know. It's heavy. No, I don't think there's a gun in it. But Amy is going to read the back as well. Let me get over there.
This brings it smaller.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
It says, the campaign dossier set contains 3 panel keepers screens, 3 of them.
Yep.
Evidence board, that's necessary. You have to find the usual suspects.
Yep.
18 personnel portraits, 37 index card handouts, 62 lore sheets. I guess you have to make copies if you have 63 players.
Yep.
25 pre-generated character sheets. Yes. 8 full-page handout sheets. These materials complement the Blessed and Blasphemous campaign book, but can be adapted to use in any Call of Cthulhu game setting.
Yes. Amy likes pre-gens. Tell them why you like pre-gens.
Because I hate making characters.
Right. So it's pretty impressive what you got in this Kickstarter. And I don't remember. I never remember how much these things are. I just get them. They get paid. And then suddenly they come, which is kind of the fun. It's like Christmas in. Oh, wow.
But the cats want to sit in that box, that is, too.
Yeah, but look at this panel. It's like.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah, it's really neat. It's like a kind of like 40s, old 40s kind of movie poster like color art. It's pretty.
It's almost those posters that you would see trying to get people to come in and join the war.
Yeah, yeah. It has weapons, risk counters, additional info, trucks, planes, Arabic names, and the family names, sanity point cost things. The climate of Morocco, a little chart about that, and risk encounters, which is kind of neat. So
they tell you the proper temperature of the Moroccan
weapons is very handy. It has everything from, I see a Thompson submachine gun, a Saint Etienne double-barreled hunting shotgun, various machine guns, Hotchkiss Vickers. Pretty nice, pretty cool. So, yeah, it's a pretty nice little specific. Sheet that I'm not going to open the cards, but there's lots of cards. Was that a matchbook? What are these? Oh, these are little player cards.
Oh, how cute is that?
The little player cards. There's another fold out thingy.
If it was a matchbook.
Oh, this is the whiteboard.
That's the evidence collection board.
Which is kind of their little mugshots. Yeah, little mugshots. Because then you can put like these things on there. So it's got a really cool evidence board looking thing.
Mr. Green did it in the office with a candlestick.
Right. And then a sheet full of handouts that I'm not going to. Here's one character. What do you think of the character sheet? We're not going to open it. We don't have to open it. We're not going to look at everything. But
he looks mad.
Yep.
Baptiste Leham.
Lamont.
Says he's good looking, dark, tall, rather thin. Means he's not been eating.
Yeah.
Just about everyone else in World War II. Born in the Basque region in southwestern France. He stopped his archaeology studies in Paris in 1936 to join the fight against Franco in Spain.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, probably people who fought against the fascists in Spain. So, yeah, it's a really neat compilation. I don't know. I want to start it Friday. But we'll see. I have to read through it. But it's I was trying to read through the PDF, but it was so much easier to read through a physical copy. So there you go. Wow. Almost 11 minutes introducing the Blessed and the Blasphemous. Maybe we'll actually get some actual play in. And maybe Amy will pick a character or two. Maybe we can have other people join us. Maybe we can dress up and do like a big Kickstarter. Yeah, do a big Kickstarter and then have it done production quality, film style. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that's not going
to
happen.
I know. All right. Talk to you guys later.
It's an orgy, a game, and everybody knows your name.
Vortex Circuit.
The organizer and Satan are one and the same.
Vortex Circuit.
And we'll all be bumping uglies playing in shows games.
Vortex Circuit.
North Texas RPG Con. First weekend in June at the Westin Inn in scenic urban Texas. Pack those dice bags and a spare liver.
North Texas RPG Con.